This is the last sample lesson you'll be getting for the Washington Real Estate Salesperson Exam audio lessons. The full series of audio lessons is 8 hours and 37 minutes in length and consists of 20 individual lessons. You've now listened to about a quarter of the full series of audio lessons, and hopefully you will find it valuable enough to consider purchasing the full series of audio lessons. If you are interested, go to reexampodcast.com for further details. Now let's get on to the final sample lesson for the Washington Real Estate Salesperson Exam audio lessons.
Welcome to this lesson entitled Land Use Controls. In this lesson, we will be talking about some of the ways that land is regulated and governed, including zoning and what that means, different and other regulations, different environmental laws that fall under this category, and so on and so forth. So let's go ahead and get started. The government has what is called police power. And that means that it has the right to create laws and enforce laws that are for the public good. They promote the general welfare of the public. So it's trying to do as much good for as many people as possible. And because of these powers, they can enact these laws that help them think of the greater good. And so these laws, when you're talking about real estate, have to do with planning and zoning. That means that the government sets what are called zones to different parcels of land. And a zone says what is allowed to be built on that particular piece of land. There's only certain things that can be built there. For example, only houses, only businesses, and so on and so forth. And so in this way, they can plan communities out in such a way that makes sense, in a way that is good for everyone. And so that's kind of the reason behind zoning, is it's not just the government trying to control everyone's lives. It's to try to build in the smartest way possible so that everyone receives the benefits. So let's talk a little bit about what that looks like. Imagine, if you can, what would happen if anybody just built whatever they wanted, wherever they wanted. You'd have factories next to houses. You'd have places that were not accessible for utilities. You'd have places where it was a very long way from schools or from police stations or hospitals or other things that people need. And so most cities and counties have what's called a planning commission. And that is just a group of people that sits down and makes what's called a master plan. Sometimes this is also known as a general plan. And in this master plan, they outline the goals for the community and some of the precepts that they're going to abide by to say how they want the community to progress. And so one of the ways they do this is that they create zoning ordinances, and not only do they zone places, but then they also can hear exceptions. Because of course, there are always going to be exceptions to the rule. There's always going to be things that come up where it really isn't the best interests of everyone to go ahead and make an exception. But like I said, those are just the exceptions. They're not the everyday occurrence. When the Planning Commission zones a particular area, it's usually for only one specific purpose. And sometimes they might even create a plot of land or a portion of land known as a buffer. And a buffer is just it is between two kinds of property that are not compatible with each other. So let's say there's a residential area. You usually don't want that right next to a big smoky factory, that sort of thing. So you put a buffer zone in the middle. And zoning ordinances control not only what can be built there, but also the height, the size, the shape of the buildings, as well as what they can be used for. So it's not just what can be built there, but also kind of the parameters of how big the buildings can be as well. One thing that you're looking for with zoning is to regulate population density. And that just means how many people are going to live in a certain area. So if you take a square mile, how many people are going to be living there per square mile? If it gets too dense, you might have problems with traffic. The crime rate might go up if there's too many people and not enough resources in a small area. And you're just going to need more infrastructure if you have more people. So a lot of communities try to control the population density so that it never gets too dense, so that the growth will be sustainable. So there are many different types of zones, but let me just discuss a few of the ones that you're going to see more often. The first is an industrial zone. And an industrial zone is just that. It is used for industry. It means that you're going to build things like factories and warehouses in that particular zone. Industrial zones aren't often close to residential zones. At least that's not usually the desirable thing to happen. Then we have what are called residential zones. And these residential zones are just that, residences. They're places where people live. You've got lower density residential zones, which are things like single family homes or duplexes. And then you've got higher density residential zones. And those are things like apartment buildings and condos that pack people in really tight. So that's plays into the population density, how many people per square mile are living in these residential zones. Then we've got commercial zones. Commercial zones are for businesses. They're places where people can either have their small businesses or chains can set up shop. Commercial zones, anything to do with businesses, people selling goods and services. Usually, if there are residential zones, you also want to have a ready access to commercial zones. People need to go buy their food or, you know, whatever services are necessary for people close by. So that's one thing that planning commissions take into consideration when they're placing the zones. And then there are also special use zones. There are some of these zones that are for public use, public parks, public buildings, government buildings such as post offices, police stations, and fire stations. So there are things that fall outside of those big three kinds of zones as well. So especially in places that have been around for a long time, there's always conflicts that are going to arise. And so the Planning Commission has to make certain exceptions. So we're going to talk about non-conforming uses, variances, conditional uses, and rezones. These are all exceptions to the usual rules that allow people to go against what the regular zoning is. The first one of these exceptions is called non-conforming use. And that just means that sometimes someone is operating in a certain zone, they have been for a long time, and then the zoning changes. And then suddenly that person finds themselves not matching the zone. So for example, if let's say somebody owns a business, they own a bookstore, and then suddenly the zone that they're in is rezoned for residential use. And so technically, a bookstore is a commercial use. And so that's actually not conforming with the zone, since that person was there first and that they've been legally occupying that place for a number of years, they can be granted permission to use it as a non-conforming use. So that's just one example of how that can work. Though down the road, let's say the person then sells the bookstore and leaves, then it's most likely that the next person will not be allowed to use that as a commercial space anymore, but that it would be changed back over to a residential space. So then we have what's called a variance. And a variance is a case in where, and if the zoning law was going to be enforced to the letter of the law, then it would cause some sort of injury or some sort of problem with the owner, and that that problem is going to outweigh the benefit of enforcing the zoning requirements. So in this case, the bad outweighs the good. So enforcing the law is not going to be good. And so in this case, they can apply for what's called a variance, and they have to show that they would be damaged if the law were strictly enforced. And if they can do that beyond a reasonable doubt, then they can go ahead and get a variance, and they can keep on using their property in a way that is not in accordance with the zoning. Next, we have what's called conditional uses. And so these are special ones, such as hospitals or schools or churches. They don't really fit into the usual boxes of zoning. For example, if you think about a church, it's not really a business, so it's not commercial, but people don't usually live there, so it's not residential, and it's certainly not industrial. And so it's kind of just a special category all unto itself. And so then it gets what's called a conditional use permit that allows it to operate where it operates, but under certain conditions. So if it's in a residential area, that it meets the requirements that it's not causing problems with the surrounding homes, that it has enough parking, enough utilities, and all of those things to make sure that it's fitting in well with everything around it. And then finally, we have what's called a rezone. And this is something that can happen if the property owner says, well, I think that my property was zoned incorrectly. They can petition to have it rezoned. If something becomes more restrictive, it's called a downzoning. And if it becomes less restrictive, it's known as an upzone. Another way that the government, at both the state and the local level, controls the land is through subdivision regulation. And so a subdivision is just where you're taking a parcel of land and you are chopping it up into two or more smaller parcels. A lot of times we think about subdivisions as being neighborhoods where the land is subdivided into individual lots where people can then build their houses, that sort of thing. So that, yes, that is an example of a subdivision. And in the state of Washington, there are two different kinds of subdivision regulations. And the first are physical regulations. And these are administered by each individual county in Washington. And they're pretty similar throughout the state. They don't vary all that much. And if there's a developer who wants to subdivide a parcel of land, they have to submit what's called a plat map. So that's a map that shows how it's going to be cut up, all the different lots, the numbers, the boundaries, what the streets are going to look like, what the utilities are going to look like. And then they have to also bring this plat map to the proper officials, usually the planning commission. So they have to sign off and say that it conforms with all the regulations, that the roads are large enough, that that the utilities are good, and so on and so forth. And then the second thing that you need to know about is the Washington Land Development Act. So the Washington Land Development Act is a law for anyone who sells or advertises 26 or more unimproved lots to the general public. So that means that there's nothing on the lots. They're just lots that could be developed into properties, and there are 26 or more. And it actually applies to the subdivision even if it's located in another state besides Washington, if it is promoted within the state of Washington. So this law means that the developer has to prepare what's called a public offering statement that gives just information about the actual development, and it discloses different information about liens on the land, the condition of the land, the different warranties that are provided, and so on and so forth. So it's a way to make sure that people are getting all of the information that they need in order to make an informed decision. So let's go ahead and switch gears and talk now a little bit about environmental laws. These are ways that the government has tried to regulate the real estate industry in such a way that we also think about protecting the environment. And so here are some of the ones that you might run into. We have what's called the Shoreline Management Act. And so that it's trying to protect the shoreline, both along the coast, like above the ocean, but also in large lakes and streams. It regulates what can be built close to the shorelines. We have the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA. And that's a federal law. That means that federal agencies have to prepare what's called an environmental impact statement for any action that's going to have a significant impact on the environment. But this also includes not only just the federal agencies, but private uses that require the approval of a federal agency. So this is what often comes in when we're talking about real estate developments. So things that have to be approved by a federal agency have to have one of these environmental impact statements prepared. We have the State Environmental Policy Act, and so this is called SEPA. It's similar to NEPA, so the NEPA is the national one, and SEPA is the state one. And this means that you have to prepare this environmental impact statement for state and local agencies that it may have an impact on the environment, and then also private actions that have to be passed off by state or local agencies. And so this really applies to housing. Then we have what's called CERCLA. That's the Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation and Liability Act. It's a federal law that has to do with holding people accountable if they pollute the environment. They then have to pay the costs for cleanup. And so this is a law that's actually enforced by the EPA, also known as the Environmental Protection Agency. Now, real estate agents need to be aware of these laws, but also of particular environmental hazards that can creep up specific to real estate. One of these is asbestos. And asbestos is not used in real estate anymore in construction, but it was used for many years as a insulation material, and as such can cause health problems. And so that you want to make sure that if asbestos could be found on property, that is disclosed to a potential buyer. Because over time, exposure can cause serious health problems. Lead-based paint is a similar thing where it causes problems and is usually something that is only seen in older houses or properties. Radon is another problem. It's a colorless, odorless gas. It can be found in the ground. It can be found in the atmosphere. And sometimes it collects in buildings. It can seep up through the ground. And if it's too concentrated, it can cause problems such as lung cancer. You also need to disclose if there's been any contamination to the water, either through pollutants or some sort of bacteria, viruses, or even just high levels of unsafe metals. That has to be disclosed. If the property has ever been the site of illegal drugs that have been manufactured there, that has to be disclosed because that can be an environmental hazard. The chemicals that are used in manufacturing illegal drugs can leave a significant problem. Then, of course, we have mold, and mold is a pretty common problem, especially in parts of the house that are exposed to water. Then mold can spread over time, can cause problems to the people with allergies or other health problems, and it can be quite unsightly as well, make the property less valuable because of the mold problem. All right, let's go ahead and go back and see if you can test yourself. See if you can recall what we learned in today's lesson. My first question is, what is police power and how is that used by governments? police power. It's just the power of that the government has to enact laws and to enforce those laws that are for the greater good. My next question is, what is the Planning Commission and what do they do? The Planning Commission is a group of people at the city or county level that plans the use of land so that it is used for the greatest good. They zone different pieces of land and say what can be done there. So what are some kinds of zones that they can choose? What zones are in a typical community? So there are quite a few different zones. You can have residential zones, you can have commercial zones, and you can have industrial zones. So what is the difference between these three kinds of zones? What can be built in each of these three kinds of zones? So in industrial zones, things for industry, warehouses and factories and manufacturing plants. In residential zone, residences, places for people to live, whether it's high density or low density. And then we have commercial, which are places where you buy and sell goods and services. That's another factor to take into account. My next question is, what is a buffer zone and why might a buffer zone be used? So a buffer zone is just a division between two incompatible zones, zones that should not be next to each other because they are not compatible, such as a dense industrial zone right next to a residential zone. That might not be good. So they put a kind of a strip of land in between to buffer the two, so they're not right next to each other. My next question is, what is a non-conforming use? When does that happen? So a non-conforming use is when the zoning changes and suddenly somebody who was conforming is now not conforming anymore, and they can get an exception to continue doing what they were doing before. My next question is, what are some kind of buildings that would use the conditional use exception in their zoning? Some of these buildings include churches and schools, places that they don't fit into the usual templates. My next question is, what are physical regulations when we're talking about subdivision regulations? Give some examples of some physical regulations. These are the regulations that are put on someone who's building a new subdivision. How wide the roads can be, where how the access to utilities, the shape of the lots, and so on and so forth. So these are set down from county to county, but they're usually pretty standard throughout the state of Washington. And finally, what do both the environmental laws NEPA and SEPA do? What do they require? So both NEPA and SEPA require environmental impact statements from people who want to do something that is going to affect the environment. It's required of government state agencies, but it's also required of people who have to get permission or be signed off by government or state agencies as well. And that is all for our lesson for today. Thank you very much for listening.
All right, that was the final sample lesson for the Washington Real Estate Salesperson Exam audio lessons. Again, the full series of lessons is 20 individual lessons, which total 8 hours and 37 minutes in length. If you found these sample lessons worthwhile, consider going to the website, reexampodcast.com, and purchasing the full bundle of lessons. Again, that's reexampodcast.com. Thanks so much. Best of luck in your career.